to our beautiful deep community, I want to assure you the deeper is going nowhere. And the same incredible content will be released every week, but now through Arise. It is going to be less trauma heavy and more inspirational, uplifting, but it will still challenge and push you to grow. For all your deeper episodes, they are still available every fortnight. You can still get your deep hit with the deeper subscription.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And we're just like going back and forth, like fighting over this guy's dick. And at the end, like the dude's about to pop on our faces. We're both on our knees like, I want the jizz. No, I want the jizz. No, I deserve it. No, I do. And then I squirt the gay boy in the face with my milk. And then he's just like, oh.
Welcome to the deep. I'm Zoe Marshall. In my early 20s, a lot of traumatic things happened. And ever since then, I have had this fascination with people and their stories. This is The Deep. I acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which I work and live, and recognise their continuing connection to land, water, and community. I pay respect to elders past, present, and emerging. Ali Kali is famous as the lactating porn star. Yes, she's known for squirting dudes in the face with her milk during sex scenes. But when I started to talk to her, this conversation went in a completely different direction. It's a wild ride involving addiction, sex work, child loss, and meditation, masturbation. Yeah, it's a lot. And please note, if any of those things trigger you, we will link support resources in the show notes. Ali Kali, welcome to the deep.
Thank you for having me.
You're a mama. How old is your child?
She is 5. She just started kindergarten a few weeks ago.
How crazy is that? I've got a 4.5-year-old and it is just like 1 minute they're born and the next minute they're at school. It's so strange.
Yeah, I feel fortunate that like I've been home with her whole life. So it feels nice to have like, now you're in school and I get to be a person.
Are you a single parent?
I am.
How's that?
That is really hard. Yeah, it's definitely a challenge and a struggle. And, looking back, I understand now why people get married and are like financially stable and do all the things first. I was really young and it was definitely a spiritual decision. I had a bunch of dreams about her, and so wow. I didn't get an abortion.
How old were you when you fell pregnant?
I was 22 when I found out I was pregnant, and then I had her when I was 23.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to get some context. So you had dreams about this baby, and so when you fell pregnant, was that with someone that you were partnered with, or what was the situation?
Yeah, we fell in love, and then I realized he was addicted to heroin, and I was like, oh, this is not a good situation. But my like finances were tied up with his, and I wasn't in a place to like know how to ask for help or, you know, be like, mom, I need to get out of this situation. So I stayed in the relationship, and we were very close to breaking up when I found out I was pregnant. So we did stay together for a while longer, but I like figured it out, got financially independent, and now we co-parent and he's sober. So I'm proud of him. He's doing the best he can.
Yeah. Wow. That's pretty major. Cause I was going to say, so you're with this person, you're in love with this person, and then you find out they have a heroin addiction. That is shocking. I mean,
yeah.
No inkling, or how does that come up?
Well, his mom told me, and I was in such denial. I was like, no, no way, no. And she was like, yeah. And I was like, no. And then I came home one day, and he accidentally left it on the counter, and I saw it, and I was like, oh my God, oh my God.
Did you stay with him through the birth and beyond?
Yeah. Yes. He tried to break up with me when I was like 8 months pregnant because there was a cute girl came around and he was like, I'm not attracted to you. I'm not in love with you anymore. I don't want to be together. And I was like, great. Yay. And then she didn't want anything to do with him. And so then we just stayed together for a while. But it wasn't really the same after that. Like after that, I was just like, yeah, this is.
I mean, that's pretty rich to be a heroin addict and betray you with another woman. And then, like that's pretty audacious of him to be like, yeah, cool, peace. I'm not being a great guy to you. And then I still want to get back with you. And then it's like, that's very cheeky.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like I'm painting a bad picture of him. He also had a lot of things that were very lovable. He was very funny
Okay.
and kind and, you know, just like somebody that whenever you see them, you get a big smile on your face and like they give the best hugs. He was a very warm, happy person, like one of my dear friends before we got together. And then, yeah, I think him having heroin goggles on the first part of our relationship and then him getting sober. He got sober before I got pregnant and we moved to Hawaii. But yeah, we did not like each other when he was sober. So that was funny. But yeah.
Interesting. So interesting. Okay. So you have this beautiful baby. You're quite young. What are you doing for work at this time?
While I was pregnant, I did get a job at a sandwich fast food restaurant in America called Jimmy John's for one day, and I've never felt more exploited in my life than the one day I worked at Jimmy John's. And there's like literally tens of thousands of pictures of my butthole on the internet, and like, no, I will I, like,
It's such a good segue. We haven't even like introduced what you do for work, but now we have. Okay, so we're at Jimmy John's and then what happens next?
Well, I had been doing porn for, let's see, 3 years. I think, well, I started off as soon as I turned 18, I was a cam girl. I went to beauty school, but I was on online. Well, I realized I'm like chronically depressed when I was 18 and addicted to masturbating. I would like jerk off like 10 times a day. And someone was like, you know, you can do that for work, like from your computer. So I was like, what? Okay, cool. So I would just go on my computer, rub one out, make money, pay the bills. And I did that for a long time until one of my clients was like, yeah, there's like a website. Because I realized really quick, if you want to be a cam girl, having a niche is important. Like I could look like any of the girls, but like to stand out. Yeah, I just grew a bush. So I just did hairy porn for.
I love that that is a niche.
I kind of was very like anti-establishment, feminist, kind of like, you know. And also, I think too, I was really insecure about the way my vagina looked because it wasn't like a Barbie, you know. Like, I thought about getting surgery because I just like have, now I know
Wow.
it's totally normal, but I like hid behind having a bush for a long time.
That's so fascinating. Can we talk about those two things? Because,
Yeah.
like, I think there's something really important there for women listening that think that they might have an imperfect pussy because we have seen or we've heard through conversations men have said about burgers and lettuce leaves, or however it's been discussed, that one is gross and one is neat and tidy. And to be in the sex industry and think that you don't have a pretty pussy and hide behind the hair, that seems like very complex, right? Because you're on display, but then you're also not completely at one with it. Was that tricky for you?
I think I wasn't totally conscious of it at that point. It's like more reflecting that I understood when I decided that I wanted to go mainstream and like shave the bush. I had to really confront like my insecurity with my vagina. But doing porn, and being hairy, like, so many dudes love my pussy just the way it is. Like, they're like totally, to me, gross. Like, I think I don't want to have hair. I think that, like, aesthetically, that's not my vibe. And but yeah, just being like worshipped just for how it was exactly in its like raw natural state. I don't know, just when I read this book called You're a Badass: How to Stop Doubting Your Greatness and Live an Awesome Life, and I was like, I want to be on the cover of a magazine, I want to be a porn star, I'm gonna go for it, you know, I'm gonna get rid of the hair thing, I've been hiding behind it for years, and I'm like ready to break through. So
wow.
That happened right after I had my baby. So that was, yeah, when I was lactating. And
we will get to that, girl. We will get to that.
That's what pushed me through into like the next phase of my porn career.
Okay. So we're camming 18 to like, what, 21 or something. Then pre-pregnancy and then during pregnancy, what are you doing work-wise? Still porn?
Yeah, I did porn. I would cam sometimes. Definitely would sell my underwear or like sell my pee.
How do we sell pee? How do you box that up?
Yeah, interestingly, one guy would pay me a lot of money to pee in a cup and like take pictures of it and then soak it all up in paper towels and then put the paper towels, like leave the paper towel in the cup, seal it in a bag, and then wrap it with bubble wrap and ship it. So he would, like, I guess just like strain it out of the paper towels.
Wow. How much for this? How much for weeing and postage? How much?
I would charge $150 for a cup of my pee.
Wee. Wow. And then posting. That must have been the weirdest day though, right? Like going up to the counter, posting something and being like, yes, and you know what's in the bag, but they don't know what's in the bag.
Yeah, I would usually have my baby daddy run to the post office to do it because, yeah, he was always going to the post office anyways for his business. But it is funny to think about.
Okay, so we're doing some like interesting elements to the sex work. You're now pregnant, you do Jimmy John's, and then what do you do for work? Do you go back to porn during the pregnancy?
I did for a little bit. Well, the first like 5 months I was really sick, like throwing up blood sick. I was so sick, and I went to the mental hospital because I got really depressed and I was just like had no support, obviously, like my baby daddy was addicted to heroin before, and we were living in Hawaii, we moved back and we moved in with my mom, and he was working, and then he wanted to quit his job, and my mom was like, okay, if he quits his job, like, you can't live here, because his hands were hurting and he wanted to find a different job. But as soon as he was like, I can't do this anymore, my mom was like, you're out. And I was like, okay, we're fucked, because we have to go back to like Southern California where the heroin is. And I couldn't tell my mom. I was too ashamed to tell her, like, if we move back, he's gonna relapse. And so yeah, we ended up moving back in with his mom, but I was like, you know, so hormonal and just so dumb that, you know, and depressed that I was like just having intrusive suicidal thoughts. And I told my doctor, like, is there something natural I can take, like not antidepressants, because I've dealt with depression since I was 12. And but this was like different. This was like it felt like a voice in my head being like, crash the car, crash the car, crash the car, like, you and your baby will go to heaven, you'll be fine, just go. Wow. Just do it. Wow. And so I told my doctor, and she was like, yeah, you gotta go to the mental hospital. So I did that for a week, and I got a good look at our like mental health situation, and how there's just like, here's a pill and feel better. But I wasn't taking pills, and I felt really sad watching that, which kind of was one thing that led into what I do now, is I'm an energy psychology practitioner. But back to the porn thing. Yes. And to answer your question, sorry to talk about the like,
no, I think health. That's really, I think it's important. It's, called perinatal depression, and it's when you're with child in your body. And I really, I had a second pregnancy that I really struggled mentally with, ended up miscarrying that one, but was so dark. And I think when you're also that sick and then hormonally everything's on its head and you are just so incredibly unhappy, it's a really hard place to navigate, let alone get up off the couch, you know. And then you have, you know, your baby daddy struggling with his own demons, you're being kicked out of a home, you're having to financially figure it out. Like, it's a lot. It's a lot on your plate. So when you're in this position and you're like, I'm not in a good place mentally, but we need to get some dollars, and you're at Jimmy John's, and then are you back camming, or what's the next step for you when you're like, I need cash?
Okay. So out of the, as soon as I got out of the hospital, I moved back to Oxnard and I worked at this bikini bar, which I loved because it was no touching. I didn't get naked. I would just go on the stage, do a sexy dance for 10 minutes, make a bunch of money, and then get off the stage.
So were you at the bikini bar pregnant?
Yes, but I was so skinny. I didn't start showing until I was like 7 months pregnant.
Got it.
It was kind of insane, like how fit I was the whole time. So yeah, I was pregnant and so I was sober, and I didn't make as much money because I wasn't as friendly, but it was a nice test. I think it was really good for me to be sober during that time, because I don't know, I just was so present, and so I felt so connected to my body and to just do things. I really like to challenge myself and do things sober, do things that scare me sober too. It's like, okay, you know, my mom is an alcoholic. My dad is like a stoner. People escaping their reality around me happened so often when I was growing up that I like really challenged myself to push through and be sober. A lot. I don't drink still, because I don't want that to be the reality for my daughter.
I so get it. Did you feel like you couldn't kind of cross that threshold of sex work, where you said be friendlier, or, you know, you're at the bikini bar and you're still semi-clothed? Was that because you were pregnant and you were feeling like there's sacredness to this, or was it just like, I didn't feel like doing that kind of sex work while I was pregnant?
No, I still felt like doing it. I just wasn't as, you know, as flirty as when I was drinking, because it's like, you know, gross men having to talk to them. I'm used to being behind a screen. It's like what's comfortable for me, and going into the flesh was harder. And yeah, doing porn, I did some porn. I only did girl porn for a long time. That was where I was comfortable, as far as like my sex work progression. And I think because I'm super bisexual, and I'm also terrified of women, so it's like I used porn to fulfill my fantasies, and not really because I ever had to. Like, I could always cam, or I can always figure it out. I never did it because I'm like, I need money, I'm resorting to this. I did it because I love it and I have a deep passion for it, and it's fun, and I'm an exhibitionist, and it's like, I love sex and being sexy and being on camera. I love it.
So when you began to show, would you still cam and still do girl on girl porn? Was that like, because, you know, there's a definite niche for that kind of pregnancy porn.
Yeah, I still cammed. I moved back to Hawaii when I was like 7 months pregnant, and I just chilled. I would do private photos. I would sell videos. I sold a lot of custom videos, but I didn't do like mainstream or like production videos when I was like fully pregnant. Not because I didn't want to. I was back in Hawaii, and my roommate at the time, he had been our roommate before. He really stepped up. He was like, it felt like he was like my husband. And even though we weren't dating, it was like him and I were a team. And my baby daddy, he just was like our friend roommate. And it felt like, I didn't realize I was in love with my other roommate.
So you were saying you were just friends, but in fact, you fell in love with him through this period of him looking after you?
Yes.
Tricky. Okay. So let's get to the birth. Was it what you expected? Was it a vaginal birth? Was it C-section? What happened?
I had a vaginal birth. I didn't want an epidural. The healthcare system here, I feel like it's like the 1950s when you go to the hospital. Like everybody's just slow. It's like all the people that got like C's, the C's to get degrees, people that couldn't get jobs at good hospitals, like they come here. I don't so yeah, I think I'm going into labor. I go in, there's like two dumb nurses. One puts her hand in, she checks to see if I'm dilated. She can't find my cervix, sends me home. I think something's going on. But I go to the doctor in the morning. He puts his hand inside me. He's like, "You're at 5 centimeters. You should have stayed." And I'm like tripping out because I'm not in pain. I'm not, and I'm just like, "Why am I not in pain?" He's like, "You're just one of those people that doesn't really feel childbirth." And I'm like, "Okay, well, that's rad," because I had this theory that, well, I mean, it makes total sense. Like, I reading about why women have orgasms, science is like, we don't know why women have orgasms. We haven't figured it out. And I'm like, okay, every time you have an orgasm, your uterus contracts. I have 10 orgasms a day. My uterus is strong as fuck. Like, I am ready to have a baby.
All of that masturbation was really helpful now.
Yeah, and when I was pregnant, I like when I would masturbate, I didn't watch porn. I was super, that was where I was like spiritual about it. It wasn't like, as far as doing porn, that's fine, and that sacred time, like I didn't mind showing that on the external, but like that time with myself, I put so much intention into the kind of person I wanted her to be, and like I wanted her to have blue eyes and red hair, and just visualizing this like human I was creating inside of me, and just pouring so much love. Like every time I would come, I would like pour so much love into her.
Can I just ask something on that, which is really interesting?
Yeah.
Coming and thinking about pouring love into a baby, right, feels like lots of people would have a huge disconnect, right, with it. Like coming is sexual, baby in my belly, non-sexual. How did you marry the two? How did you do that?
I think because my thoughts weren't sexual, like as I was, I was like meditating, I was going into like a deep meditation, and so it was like more, like yeah, I was like stimulating my clitoris, but I wasn't like, ooh, this is hot. I was or like fantasizing about men or anything. I was just really just like kind of moving the energy inside of me and just like focusing on the sensations more, I guess, in a clinical way or like a spiritual way and not really in a sexual way.
Yeah, I just want to break that down for everyone listening who's just like, how does that work?
What?
Yeah. So then
Yeah.
when you birth this baby, it's like your vagina, right, at that time that has been so useful for so much, takes on this different purpose, right? It's this channel, it's this transition point for the love of your life being born. Tell me about that for you.
So I was at 5 centimeters, and I was early, and I had preeclampsia, so my placenta calcified, and or it was at like stage 3 calcification, which the doctor didn't notice. I heard the tech say that, and then when I went into his office, he like didn't really mention it, and I was like, "Oh, by the way, like the tech said that. Is that something to be concerned about?" And he's like, "Oh shit, yeah, that is something to be concerned about." I'm like, great, I love this. Doing my own doctoring. But so we waited until I was at 38 weeks. So for like 11 days, I was just hanging out at 5 centimeters, and I would have contractions. And what I realized is that like she wasn't turned right in my belly, which I don't know why they didn't like check to see this, but I don't know why anybody does anything. I don't know. They said when I was at 38 weeks, I'm gonna come in at midnight. they'll give me a Pitocin, which is oxytocin, to like get me ready and then break. He said, I'll come in at 6 in the morning and break your water and the baby should be out around lunchtime. I'm like, okay, cool. I got this plan. I go into the hospital. I get the Pitocin. I have like my whole playlist and my coloring books and everything ready, my headphones. I'm like, okay, we're going to do this. He comes in around 6:30, breaks my water. I get up and go to the bathroom and then boom, worst pain of my fucking life. Like I got hit by a train. Like I went from no pain to full max pain. And I'm like, oh shit, this is not good. So not good. I like crawl back to the bed, get in the bed. I'm freaking out. I didn't take a Lamaze class. I'm terrified because I have 6 more hours of this when before he's like, oh, you're like one of the lucky people that doesn't feel childbirth. And then now it's like, nope, that's not true.
Yeah. I was going to say with that, I was very confused when they were like, I was like, I think that's a myth. Please continue.
You know what? I feel like, honestly, if I would have done it naturally where like I did the water tub dream that I had that all the hippies where I live do when they do it at home, I feel like I could have made it pretty far without it hurting super badly. I think because what I read in this book, I forgot what it was called, but she was saying that it's the fear that causes the pain. Mm-hmm. And I was scared. As soon as that happened, I did get scared. So it made sense. But so I'm laying in bed. I tell the nurse, like, I want the epidural. And I'm also like, I didn't take the class. Can you tell me what I'm supposed to do? And she's like, she's a bitch. And I'm just like, oh my God. And she's like, okay, well, the anesthesiologist has 2 C-sections right now. So you're going to have to wait 30 minutes. And I'm like, okay, I can wait 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. I'm freaking out. I'm like withering in pain. My mom is like, something's wrong. Like something, it shouldn't be like this. Cause she's had 4 kids and she's like, this isn't right. She asks the nurse, who's the dumb one that checked my cervix from the beginning of the story, to like, just to check to see how dilated I am. And so the dumb one puts her hand in. Mind you, it's been 10 minutes since they broke my water. Puts her hand in, her eyes get super big. She looks at the other dumb nurse and is like, go get doctor, blah, blah. And I'm like, why? What's wrong? And she's like, you're at 10 centimeters. The baby's coming. And I'm like, what? No, I'm not ready. Like, no. So like, yeah, it happened so fast. And then the doctor's in there and I look at that one nurse and I look her in the eyes and I'm just like, I made a huge mistake. And she looks at me like, there's nothing. There's nothing we can do now.
Yeah, it's on.
It's funny because I've always heard you say the worst things during childbirth, but I always wondered, like, what does that even mean? But like, yeah, looking the nurse in the eye and telling her basically that I should have gotten an abortion.
Well, I remember being like, you know what? This isn't for me. I'm going to pack up now. I'm just going to go home. I'm just not into this. Like, it was like these really ridiculous thoughts where you think that you have a choice because your body is just like, I'm opting out. This is just not for me. It's bizarre. Yes.
So the baby was transverse and my giant Samoan doctor had to put both of his hands inside of me. And
oh my God.
My mom was telling me to like scream, you know, she's like, scream it out. And he's like, no, don't scream. Just focus all of your energy on this. And I'm like, you know what? I've trained for this moment. I have like practiced squeezing my tampons out to like giving birth to tampons because I'm always trying to train my pussy muscles to be tighter.
Dying.
And so, yeah, I just clicked into the zone. I became one with the doctor and I just pushed her out. And then I see in the like reflection of the light, like I'm bleeding and they're like sewing me up and I didn't have an epidural or anything. So that was the worst part, was feeling the needle like sewing me back up.
Thank you. I agree. That was so rude. So rude. Yeah. That part where you've just like split open, your whole body is like in half. And then they think that they can put needles down there. It was disrespectful.
I agree. You're hilarious. So they put her on my chest and yeah, this is an interesting moment for me because I did not feel that love feeling. I did not feel that, like, oh, this is my baby. Oh, feeling. I felt absolute terror and, like, I'm tired and I want to sleep. And just all of it was all like a me, me, me kind of feeling. And I read about it because I was like, this is kind of disturbing. Like, I feel like there's something wrong with me. But this happens when people are given Pitocin, that oxytocin, for when they induce childbirth. It can have that effect of, like, not bonding with the baby afterwards. So
here in Australia, it's called syntocinin, which is, I think, the same thing. But I just wanted to say it for people that are like, what is that drug? Please continue.
Yeah. And that was something I felt a lot of shame about. But I want to talk about it because I feel like I'm not the only one that's felt this way. And I wanted to normalize, like, it's different for everyone. And the next day after I had rest and I, like, actually got to, like, be calm in my nervous system and hold her and look at her for the first time, yes, like, overwhelming love and joy and just tears and, you know, my starshine, light of my life, sweet, beautiful angel. Yeah.
But you know what? I think it is important to talk about that because so many women experience this disconnect post-birth of, like, I don't want to touch it. I don't want to look at it. I just need to regroup because that was horrific or traumatizing or scary or whatever, and then circle back. And that we don't need the shame attached to us when we didn't feel the way the movies are saying we should feel. So I think, thank you so much for voicing that and honoring that, because that is so true.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I want to move on now because a big part of this conversation is around breastfeeding, is around lactating. So tell me a bit about your feeding journey with your baby and what that was like for you.
It was really easy. My nurse was like, you have the perfect nipples for breastfeeding. So I, you know, just put her on. She latched on really easily and it was great. And then my milk boobs came in and I was like, whoa, this is amazing. I have, like, the best boobs of my life.
I love those boobies. Oh my God, obsessed.
Yes, me too. I decided I'm not going to get implants because I don't want to have health issues, but, like, I miss having big, giant, milky boobs, for sure.
I agree. Especially that, like, day 2 and 3 when the milk comes in and they're, like, up to your chin. That's so fun. That's so fun. Okay, so you've got a great established milk supply. You're feeding your baby. How long do you feed her for?
I breastfed her for, like, I think until she was 2.5 or 3. We took a break for a little bit, but went back to it.
And tell me how, I mean, being a sex worker, how your fanny is, you know, after it's healed and everything, do you have a different relationship to it? Or are you like, let me get back on the horse. I want to start working again. I feel so fucking empowered. Like, which way does it go?
Well, I decided I wanted to do mainstream porn, and I got an email from an agent and they were like, we're going to promise you all these nice things. And I was like, I'm dumb in 24 or 23. That sounds great. Let's do it. So I got this agent and I booked my first boy girl scene. And it was after I gave birth and it was so painful. I think because, like, in porn, they stop taking Viagra at some point because it doesn't work. And they, like, shoot up their dick with, like, Viagra medicine or something. And so it's like
a rock.
Yes, it was so hard. And, like, he was super hot, so I was into that. But, like, it was so painful. And I just, even though it hurt really badly, I'm a trooper. So I just, like, sucked it up, faked it till I made it. got through the scene, 30 minutes of like the worst pain of my life. And I was like, okay, this sucks.
Hang on. I need context. How many months postpartum is this?
I would say like, I want to say 6.
6 months. And have you had sex or have you had any penis in there prior?
Yeah, with her dad every like, you know, occasionally, but that would be like for like 2 minutes and not, you know, not like exciting in any way.
You weren't prepared. The fanny, it was a bit of a rude awakening. We call pussies fannies. Yes. Here sometimes. Okay. So at this point, right, you're getting into the scenes and then something interesting is happening. Can you tell me about the boobies?
I started to get attention for having milk, which was funny because it's hard to shock anyone, but like directors, like some scenes I couldn't like lactate during the scene because it was for, you know, more mainstream companies that wasn't allowed in. But yeah, they would like see it and they would just be like so excited by it. So then I would like post on Twitter about that. And then yeah, I got booked to work for the top lesbian site in the world, which was awesome because it's like really hard, really competitive to get to like work for this company. And so that was like really awesome because they wanted to do a milk scene. And I did it with Abella Danger, who I didn't know who she was at the time, but she's like, you know, a superstar. So that was rad.
Tell me though about what that means. What does it mean when they want you to lactate? Like, what is that? Like, what? Give me the. Is it on the face? Is it on the body? Is it in the mouth? Like, what is? How are we using the milk from the boobs?
Yeah, I was just spraying it wherever, I guess. Like, she was drinking my milk and I would spray it all over her. It was actually like kind of painful at the end because like she was squeezing my boobs so much at the end, like I was like bleeding a little bit, like my boob was like a little bit of blood was coming out because she was like rough. But yeah, that was like not super awesome part of that. But that scene was like the top rated scene for the whole year on the top girl company's website in the world.
What?
So I was like,
so there is like a vibe for the milk and sex combo.
Yes, for sure. It was a thing.
And like, because I breastfed both my babes, for me, this is what I find so fascinating. When I was feeding and my husband would want to touch my breast sexually, I would freak out. It was like these things were now purely the source of nourishment for my child. You cannot sexualize my feeding source. You know, it felt very disconnected and wrong for me. Like I felt really like yucky about it. I'm assuming the answer is no, but did you ever... When you felt like you were going to cross the line with that, was there something there for you in that way or no?
No, weirdly there. I mean, I was kind of surprised that there wasn't, but yeah, I think because it's like a professional setting and, you know, obviously like my child is nowhere to be found at, you know, she's at home with grandma. I'm disconnected totally from her. Then it was like, yeah, this is a fun thing to do and I'm exploring something and I just want everyone to get off. I want everybody to have as many orgasms as they can whenever they can. That's like my wish for the world. So yeah, I don't know. I thought it was fun, especially being able to spray it, like how I could spray it across a room. It was like I could spray it so far. It was just fun.
Oh my gosh. So it changes like, so, and then would you go home and feed the baby?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So it's like double use. It's like a work thing. And then it's like feeding my child. So this becomes, yeah. I'm thinking you were saying at the start of the conversation, there's a niche. Does this become your niche?
It does. That's like what I'm probably the most well known for. The highlight of my career was during that time. And then after that, I kind of, I just wanted to be on the cover of a magazine. And once I hit that goal, I was like, okay, I don't really need to do this anymore.
So how many scenes did you do with the milk?
Surprisingly, not that many, like maybe like five tops.
Wow. Because I've heard, or I saw a documentary on lactating sex workers, and there was one that would do like private escorting. And generally it was just for men to suckle. And I'm sure there was other elements that were sexual to that. But were you booked for things like that, like private suckling?
No. I mean, I have a really like big boundary around meeting people in real life. I haven't crossed over into escorting or like doing privates, but that's just where I'm comfortable. I have no judgment for, I feel like girls that can do that, you are so brave. That is not for me though. I surprisingly am very like reserved on who I share my sexual energy with in the physical. So yeah. It's yeah, but I mean, more power to you know.
In the scenes, did you have men suckling?
So I didn't do very many boy-girl scenes. I only did ones I really wanted to, and I always had a fantasy to be with two guys that like also were with each other. So I booked a scene for a company called Why Not Buy, and the premise was it was me and this like gay boy interviewing for a scholarship, and then we're both like fighting, trying to seduce this man, and but like me and the gay boy, we don't kiss or fuck at all. And we're just like going back and forth, like fighting over this guy's dick. And at the end, like the dude's about to pop on our faces. We're both on our knees, like, I want the jizz. No, I want the jizz. No, I deserve it. No, I do. And then I squirt the gay boy in the face with my milk. And then he's just like, oh, and then we both get the shot on our faces.
I just would love to be the writer, you know, behind the scenes of like the story arc would just be, was that a moment for you on set where you're like, I'm going to do this? Or was that set up prior?
No, I decided, or I like asked if I could do it. Cause it was the funniest. That was one of my very favorite scenes I've ever done. It was the funniest like storyline, and it was so silly. And it was the greatest. I loved working with that whole crew.
When did you retire the lactating moments?
So in 2019, there was another mama that I met. We like co-starred in a lactating scene together. She had a baby a couple months after I did. And this is like a trigger warning. This is like a dark story as to why my career ended. Just wanted to state that. But we had all these synchronicities. We both like had our babies around the same time. We both lived in the same area. Even though our shoot was like an hour away, we lived like 5 minutes away from each other. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like a mom friend and you do porn too. Oh my gosh, this is amazing. Like our babies are going to grow up together. This is wonderful. And at that time, me and my baby daddy broke up, and I decided like, okay, I'm going to do boy girl porn. Like I'm going to like do it and do it like fully send it, even though I don't want to. I don't want to have sex with men on camera, but I can't afford this apartment by myself. And that was like the point where like I was about to do porn for money and not because I wanted to. So I have like all these scenes booked like for Brazzers and like top companies. I was ready to make my break. And her parents found out she did porn and kicked her out. And so and her husband had PTSD and was a vet, and they were both really struggling because her body did not recover the way mine did after having a baby. So like her career was really struggling, and I felt I had a lot of compassion for them. And so I was like, you guys can stay with me in my one bedroom apartment. And you have a month, you can figure it out, like to figure it out. And so one morning I wake up to her screaming, and like I knew as soon as I woke up that it was a death scream. I felt it in my bones, and this is the trigger warning. Sorry. So I hear like, she's frozen. And I'm confused. my baby daddy stayed the night that night. He's like, well, can you put her in front of the heater? Like, what's going on? I get up, I go in, I look in the crib, I see her baby just laying there. I know she's dead. You know, they're on the phone, like it all happened so fast. The ambulance comes, my baby is awake, she doesn't know what's going on. I'm like, okay, we're gonna go to grandma's house, like, and figure it out. Or, like, you know, it was like, here's my contact info. And then they come at like midnight that night, and they're like asking us questions, and they're like, okay, well, babies don't just die. We don't know how this baby died. And until we figure it out, we're gonna take your baby. And so they took my baby, and I didn't see her for 2 weeks.
Oh my god.
And they, yeah, I was stupid. I didn't know. I thought, like, cops are on your side and you're supposed to just always be honest. So, like, when they asked me questions about my baby daddy, I was just honest and, like, you know, talked about why we broke up, because he relapsed on heroin and I didn't want to deal with it and blah, 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 blah. And so I think to them it looked like, you know, two porn stars in a tiny apartment, like, and a dead baby. Like, this doesn't look good. But you know, they drug tested me. I had no drugs in my system. I had a marijuana pipe in my house. And yeah, they said that I had depression, so I wasn't fit to be a mother, and that I had substance abuse issues, because that's just what their, like, charges were against me. And so I found out 2 months later, it took 2 months to get the toxicology report back and to find out why they took my child and why I was only allowed to see her for 2 days a week for 3 hours for like 3 months, was because she had sepsis.
Your baby?
No, the other baby, the baby that passed.
Sorry, can I just ask how old both your children were this time?
My daughter was almost two. She was going to turn two in like 2 months. And the other baby was, I think, a month older. So she was, like, also almost two.
Okay. So the baby had sepsis.
Yeah. But it gave her a false positive for amphetamines. And so they were like, yeah. So that's what they said. And it's really fucked up, because the system in the United States where, like, when they get children into the system, they want to keep them as long as possible because they make a bunch of money from the state each kid that they get. So it's really, wow. really fucked up. It's really fucked up. And it's like, it was devastating, obviously, like losing one baby super close to me, losing my baby, having to go through the system. And at the same time, I just took all the lessons. I was like, obviously the universe wants to teach me something. So I took all the classes. I did all the things. I was actually very grateful, because they told me I was codependent. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. But actually, yes, I am codependent. And which is why I was like, here, struggling family, come live with me and I will take care of you. And instead of, like, worrying about myself and taking care of myself, I, you know, felt that need to just do that. But yeah, the lessons I learned from it, and going to something called Nar-Anon.
Is it Narcotics Anonymous?
Kind of. It's like a support group for families and friends that are, like, struggling with somebody who is addicted.
Ah, yes. I've heard of it. So it's not you're addicted. It's like you're the loved one of the addicted person.
Yeah. And having that time, even though it was hard, to just kind of take a step away from being a mom and, like, focus on my shit. I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful. I always try to find gratitude for everything. Like, even though it was a fucking terrible situation, just, like, one, I canceled all my shoots, and, you know, I didn't go through with doing something I didn't want to do. So I'm grateful that it got me out of my lease from my apartment. I got to, like, get out of this whole mess I was in, and I got to learn a lot about myself and go to therapy and, like, do a lot of work. And then to have the judge tell me that I was the fastest person in their county to get their child back was, like, laughable to me. Cause I'm like, I didn't do anything though. Like,
so she was, how long was she physically out of your full-time care?
For 2 months.
I just can't even imagine. Did you know where she was? Did you know the family?
Oh yeah. She was with her baby daddy's mom. So she was with grandma.
Thank God. Okay, she wasn't with the in a system like a foster home?
Yeah, she was for 2 weeks while they were like figuring out everything. So there was like that 2 weeks where but I was in complete shock. I didn't feel anything. I was disassociated for that time. Like I didn't really eat or talk, but I was just kind of a ghost of a person, like not really comprehending what happened.
Can I ask, how did a baby get sepsis? Did you ever find out?
I never found out. It could have been anything. And it's the worst part for me, the part that makes me sick to my stomach, is when we went to get our stuff from the detective, he told my baby daddy that when they cut her open, she was rotting from the inside. So, like, they knew from the beginning. The coroner knew, the detective knew. Like, they had to have known. Like, they wanted to say it was one thing, but, like, they said they literally knew. Yeah.
Did you notice that this baby, when it moved in with you, was sick?
It was. So she, the weird thing, there was a weird thing was that, like, she was smaller than my daughter, but she would be in like size 6 diapers, and she would fill up a full diaper in the middle of the night and then like have to be changed. I babysat one time and like that happened, and I was like, this is kind of concerning, but like they'll figure it out, you know, like that's how I thought. And then, yeah, she was very docile. Like she wasn't like, if I would try to interact with her, she'd kind of like scream at me, or like, you know, I didn't think she was sick, though. Like, she was really sweet, and, you know, she was a good baby. She would go to bed in her crib at night. Like, she seemed more behaved and, like, just even-tempered and just, like, she was chill. And my baby was just, like, you know, wild and into everything. And, like, and looking back now, I understand, like, yeah, she probably just wasn't feeling well.
Little darling, that's so traumatizing, and on every level for every person. You know, so traumatizing. Can I ask a question that I know everyone is like, for fuck's sake, Zoe, ask the question. Is how is it for you, you know, the older your daughter gets, for you to share what you do for work? What is your thought process around explaining those things?
Yeah. Well, right now, I mean, I'm an energy psychology practitioner. After that big trauma, I was like, what is trauma, and what does it mean, and why do we do this? So I shifted careers totally, but I still cam sometimes for fun. And I have thought about this, is that I'm just going to be honest with her. Like, I feel like I grew up with so much shame, and I was a really sexual child. Like, you know, principal calling my mom all the time, getting in trouble from parents, friends calling my mom. Like, my mom was hearing about me being a slut from the time I was like 10 years old, even though I didn't lose my virginity until I was 16 and I married the boy I lost my virginity to. I was a really, really good girl, but I was just, I think, because I was, I guess, molested, even though I don't really remember, by a babysitter when I was 4. And then I was just a hypersexual child. And that was something that, like, even I have a soccer card from when I was 5 years old, and on the back of it, it says like hobbies, and it says free climbing, exotic dancing, and swimming. And I'm like, who the fuck let one, what, like, this had to be written down on a piece of paper. Like, I can't
who
write.
Wrote
They're
this?
Asking questions. Who wrote this? And then who from Life Touch, the like photo company, thought that that was okay to put on a 5-year-old soccer card? Like,
yeah.
But I got so much shame from so many people, and I repressed it really hard. And then when I like was 19, I went to Burning Man for the first time. It was the first festival I ever went to. And I don't know if you know what Burning Man is.
I do.
If you've heard of it. I thought it was like a craft fair. I hated hippies at the time too. So I like went into it not knowing, and then got my first hug, like an open-hearted hug from a stranger. And I was like, whoa, this is what I've been missing my whole life. And I, for a week, just got to be my complete authentic self. And then I went to another festival a few weeks later and took LSD for the first time. And then realized that, like, my whole life was a lie. That all these, like, social constructs that have been built around me as a person to shape my identity or what I thought society wanted me to be was all bullshit, and I actually am a really sexual person. And then I was like, I want to release the shame, and I want to teach women that it's okay to be sexual. It's okay to be a slut and run wild with your sexual energy. Something I was judging women so harshly for was something that I really just wanted to be doing myself. And so I wrote a book, and I'm about to publish it, but it's about, about that, repressing my sexuality, and then all the adventures my vagina took me on after I embraced my sexuality.
And so, going full circle then, how will that play out for how you raise your daughter and how you share what you do?
If she has questions, I'll be honest with her. And I want to teach her that sex is something. Now I'm coming into a point again where I've been celibate since October. I mean, I've broken a couple times, but I've been really trying hard to practice discernment, and who I share my sexual energy with is when I love somebody. I'm not just fucking for validation. I want to teach her that she doesn't need to do that for validation. It's okay to explore for sure and figure out what you like, and really loving somebody and being in love, that's the best. It's the best sex you'll ever have. It's being in love.
And she was like, I want to move into sex work, mom. I want to do what you did. Is that okay with you?
I mean, if she was 18, geez, that scares me. But I mean, yeah, it would be okay with me. I just would want to know what she's doing, and I wouldn't want her to hide it from me, because so as much as it would be uncomfortable, I would want her to feel safe to talk to me so that I could keep her safe and keep her from making dumb decisions, because I don't know what kind of situation she would get herself into, but I would want to know and be supportive. And but yeah, I mean, if that's what she wanted to do, I'm hoping that I hope not, but who am I to judge?
It has been so incredibly insightful and fascinating to hear some of your life. I definitely thought this was going to be a different kind of conversation, and there's so much more that we got to talk about. I'm really grateful to you for being so courageous sharing all of that. We do have one more question that every guest gets, which is, who are you when no one's watching?
Who am I when no one's watching? I am a cat. I am like waiting to get a sleep study done, but I'm pretty sure I have narcolepsy. I'm the sleepiest person in the world. I spend the majority of time in bed. So I am just a cuddly, snuggly cat.
So wonderful. Thank you so much for being with us on The Deep today.
Yes, thank you for having me.
I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Deep. If it's left you with any burning questions for me or our guests, please hit us up by direct message on Instagram at What's The Deep.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi everybody, it is Zoe here. Change is coming to The Deep. I want to welcome you to Arise. It's uplifting, it's quirky, it's curious. It's all about the mindset and self-discovery to be more helpful and of service. During 16 of The Deep, you will hear some of these episodes, and I'd love to hear what you think of them over on our Instagram at What's The Deep.